Hey, folks. Thanks for checking out the podcast. Hope you're well. Hope you had a good week. I did. In a couple of weeks, February 14th to the 16th, I'm going to be in Edmonton, Canada at Rick Bronson's House of Comedy. I'm going to Edmonton, Canada in February. We had like 5-degree weather here in New York City, but I want to go to 20 below, 30 below. And if you're in a warm weather area, fly up. Come on. Be a man. Be a woman. Step up. Rick Bronson's House of Comedy. Go online. Get tickets. And it's in Edmonton, Canada. Hope you guys can make it February 14th to the 16th. And my one-man show. I'm still going on Broadway. Paul Mercurio's Permission to Speak. Go to telecharge.com for tickets. If you're in the New York area, come see that. All right. Let's get to my interview. Hope you enjoy it. I did. Hey, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to the show. And welcome to First Timers. Really, really funny stand-up with us today. Someone been a big fan of and is just a monster act. He's got a lot of great stuff coming up, including he's got a 90-minute special out right now on Netflix, and it's the great Gabe Iglesias. How are you, man?
Thank you. I don't know about great, happy, long-winded. Great, pretty big, man. Thank you.
All right. Let me start this again. It's the mediocre, marginal Gabe Iglesias, everybody.
That works. Hey, you know what? I'd rather be that than, you know, great is all, you got to live up to that.
Yeah.
People are like, I don't know, man. What do you mean great? I tell people my specials are okay. So that when they watch them, they go, you know, it was a little bit better than okay. I go, well, I appreciate that.
that's a good approach with women and getting go when you want to sleep with them. It's like, look, I'm just going to tell you right now, not very good in bed. And then you just blow them away in bed, right?
Yeah. You always want to play it down. You want to play it down. What you do is, you know, plays it up.
Yeah. Hey, how did you... Was there a turning point? I mean, you're playing such big venues consistently for such a long time. Was there sort of a moment or a turning point in your development as a stand-up? Because, you know, I'm a stand-up myself, obviously, and it takes a while for you to find your voice and then really hone that. How was there that moment where things really started to stick and then the audiences really started to grow?
I think for me, I was always, you know, as comics, we're always insecure people. We're always insecure. Am I funny enough? Am I relatable enough? Is this going to work? Are they going to like it? I hope they like it. I had a concert promoter who eventually became my manager who took me to Minneapolis, Minnesota. And that was like, for me, that was the most crossover audience I could ever perform for, because up until then, I'd only done Southwest shows. And so I wasn't sure, like, hey, will this show cross over? Can this be bigger than just the Southwest? And after doing that show, we realized, whoa, we got something special going on here, because the only Mexicans that were there were us. It was a huge theater, you know, full of non Latinos, and they had a great time, and everything clicked. And it was one of those like, okay, we're missing the boat here. We got to go bigger.
What were you concentrating on in your act at the time? Were you talking about Mexican heritage and all of that, your weight, all of that stuff?
No, and that's the thing, too. It wasn't like I was doing a show. What are they, bro? Yeah, you know, man. I wasn't doing any of that. Right. I just think that the whole fact that there was no one doing a show that was for everyone who happened to be a person of color, in my case, like that. And so it was one of those, it was just an eye-opening experience. It was an education. It was all of that just said, hey, you know what? We belong in the bigger picture.
How did that area, how did that part of the country know about you to get that kind of following? Was it through TV appearances? Was it through YouTube? Like, what was the sort of, what got the word out about you?
At the time, I want to say it was a combination of Comedy Central and YouTube. Yeah. And then, of course, people uploading bits and pieces of you know, different shows online. So, I mean, a lot of times comics get upset that people upload stuff, but it's, you know, the internet is a double-edged sword, man. It could help you, it could hurt you. So fortunately, during those times, they were just taking specials that were already out there and then chopping them up and then, you know, posting them up. And for me, it was very, very helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know. I did a special there, and it definitely helped to kind of boost your, because they replay them, and then they, like you said, they put them online, and I agree with you about the internet. I mean, look at, I mean, the precursor to that is the Grateful Dead, who lets people record their shows, and then they pass tapes around, and that's how they became huge, because people were passing their stuff around, and so, you know, you got like all of these surrogates, you got all of these like PR people who are your audience members helping you out. So it seems to make more sense to just let it happen and let people sort of send you stuff around, you know?
If you spend most of your time fighting it, you're going to lose.
Yeah.
You're always going to lose.
Yeah.
Whether you're trying to fight piracy, whether you're trying to fight ticket scalpers, whether you're trying to fight people that are recording stuff in the shows, you know, how do you want to spend your energy? Like for me, I got an opener that goes up on stage and he lets the crowd know, hey, look, Gabriel will give you the best show if you give him the best attention.
Mm.
So if you want people at home to see this show, they didn't buy a ticket. You bought the ticket. Why do you got to give them the experience?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
And a lot of times he'll have the audience police themselves, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, nobody wants to see people getting thrown out of the shows.
No.
I've been at certain shows where comics do that, and it's just like,
Well, you know what? You know what Chappelle's doing now, and I think Chris Rock started to do it. Chappelle has everybody put their cell phone in a pouch, and then they give them a ticket or whatever for the pouch, and then they get it on the way out because I understand that. I mean, did it take you a while to figure out your voice and what you really wanted to talk about? Because you don't become this big without sort of having, you know, a very specific thing. I know you have Fluffy and the whole idea of your weight and everything, but sort of beyond that, or was that something you hit on early on in terms of having your voice down?
It took a while for me to get comfortable enough to, first of all, slow down.
Yeah.
I was so hyper and so just all over the place when I first started as a comic because, you know, you want to get that first laugh.
Right.
You want to get that first laugh. You want to get the people on your side as quickly as possible. And that's the part that made me the most nervous was, oh, they're quiet. They're quiet. They're quiet. But then I started, you know, hey, if they're quiet, they're listening.
Yeah.
So, you know, once I got over that whole having to get that first laugh, it's, you know, you want people to hear you and understand you and be with you. Mm. And by me being this extra hyper person that wasn't really me, first of all, I think that was one of the big things as far as you say, finding your voice. Well, my voice wasn't this animated person in the beginning, just because it's you know, first of all, the amount of energy I was expelling, people were catching every other word because I was talking so fast. So slowing down was a big part of it.
Yeah.
Being able to share just real moments about yourself, especially when you're a person who's flawed. A lot of times people can relate to that.
Yeah, there's a lot of power in just sort of sitting in the silences. It kind of draws them in, and I also think it projects confidence, you know. But you're right. I was the same way. You want to fill the pauses, and you just end up looking like a nervous wreck. Folks, we're going to be back with Gabe in just a second. I want to talk about one of my sponsors, Mack Weldon. Don't fast forward. They support this podcast. So I hope you can support them. It really helps out. They got great, great line of clothing. I've got their underwear right now, wearing it. Been wearing the same pair for the last week. That's how much I like them. And I'm not joking. Underwear, socks, t-shirts. Go to MackWeldon.com and use the promo code Paul. You get 20% off because you're listening to this podcast. Use the promo code Paul, 20% off MackWeldon.com. That's MackWeldon.com. Great stuff. I just got a pair of hiking pants. I got pants and shirts too. Hiking pants, awesome. Put them on last night. Went into the elevator in my building, went downstairs to the lobby, paid the Chinese food delivery guy, went back upstairs. They worked great. Very high tech. All seriousness, cool pants. MackWeldon.com, 20% off. Use the promo code Paul. Check it out. They're worth it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have them as a sponsor. All right, back to Gabe. Now, Gabe, let me ask you, is it true that you were working at a cell phone company and then you started to pursue stand-up and lost your apartment, you got evicted, and your car and all that was taken away? Like, how did this all start for you?
Dude, I was making so much money selling cell phones.
Really?
During a time when it was very, very lucrative. It was banging, man. It was booming. You know, now it's they got the smartphones, and you take it out of your pocket and you drop it and the screen breaks. I was selling cell phones that were indestructible. It was a phone called a Motorola. First of all, Motorola was a cell phone, a PC 550 flip phone, which was like a brick. It was heavy. It was heavy. You'd talk on the phone and you could just feel the tumor growing in your head from all the radiation in the phone. And you never ran out of power. Like nowadays, everybody's always carrying their cord. They got their cord. They got to plug in because, you know, running out of power. Right. Back then, those phones would last 4 days, you know, and then if you needed power, you just switch out the battery. There was a gigantic battery on the back and you could swap it out for a NiCad battery or a, you know, I forget what the other one was, nickel cadmium and nickel metal hydride battery. And, you know, if you could get someone to get a phone and get the service, there was commissions. You could make a lot of money selling cell phones. And so I was probably making about $5,000 a month at the time. Yeah. In 1997, think about that one. 1997, I was 20 years old making that kind of money. And I gave that up to pursue comedy. So yeah, I was, I thought I had enough money to last and I didn't. I you know, got evicted from my apartment. My roommate was pissed. He was pissed. My mom was mad because I was giving up all these benefits. The job gave me medical, dental, stuff I never had before. I was able to get braces. So believe me, when I chose comedy, and it wasn't even comedy that was kicking ass. It was the beginning of comedy. But for me, I was burning the candle at both ends.
I did the same thing. I mean, I had a different job, but and then when I left, I had to downsize, the same exact thing. And once I was into it and I realized, oh, these gigs are shitty. Like I'm opening like in shitholes, or I'm opening for assholes, or I'm getting stiffed on my money. I got discouraged like a year in. I'm like, I this is the biggest mistake I ever made. And then I went back to my job for a little while. And then I finally said, no, you got to really give this a shot. Did you have serious doubts once you got into it and realized, oh, the beginning, this really is, it's kind of shitty and hard?
Believe me, I had all those doubts too, but I did not see myself going back to the regular 9-to-5, even though it was a very comfortable lifestyle. I mean, man, new car, like I said, all these benefits. I had, what do they call it at that time? Disposable income.
Yeah.
I swore I was the Fonz, dude. I was all happy.
Oh,
but yeah, I was working though, probably 60 to 70 hours a week too. So trying to do that plus to stand up at night. And then a lot of times people don't understand that just because you go do stand up for anywhere from 10 minutes to an hour at night, they think that that's it. But there's a whole, you got to hang out. You got to socialize. You got to, you know, meet other comics and find out what other shows are around town. And, you know, you wind up at a Denny's at 3 o'clock in the morning and you're trying to come up with new bits and premises. And you're trying to figure out a somewhere you can go work out your set.
Yeah.
It's not just go home.
No,
you gotta be in the middle of it.
That Denny's at 3 o'clock in the morning is the businessman's lunch. Like that's the same thing. Like us hanging out at Denny's at 3 in the morning is like two bankers and a lawyer having lunch and trading information about, you know, potential leads and all that other stuff. And sometimes people who don't do this don't understand that. I mean, it looks like we're just screwing around all the time, but there's actually work being done. And hey, listen, I know you got to jump in a second real quick. You had a you had a prognosis that you were going to be dead in 2 years because your weight was so up there. You have that under control, I think. But have you talked about that in your act? And what did that do to you, like just in terms of how you approach your life?
It was rough, and I'm still not in the best place. So I got to readdress it again because I managed to lose about 100 pounds. But the problem is that I celebrated for 3 years. So, I was doing really good, man. And I'm like, woo, and people are watching me stuff my face and they're like, how did you, I got mashed potatoes and all kinds of stuff. And they're like, how the hell did you lose weight? And I'm just like, well, you know, it's moderation. Over 3 years and I gained a lot of that weight back. During that time, you know, different things I stopped doing. Like I was, you know, I didn't drink for 2 years. So that helped out a lot. But now it's one of those where I'm going to start cutting back on sugar. That's the big one right now. I just got to cut back on sugar because I'm diabetic. So I figure if I can stick to this plan, I know it's going to be hard, but I got to do it.
Yeah. Well, listen, get it under control, man. We want you around for a while. Special out now on Netflix, One Show Fits All, and you've got a sitcom coming out on Netflix as well, where you play a high school teacher. Looking forward to that. Gabe Iglesias, where can people go to check out your tour schedule and everything?
They just Google the word Fluffy, everything pops up. I took that word over. I think that a lot of times you gotta work on a brand. You gotta get something that sticks.
Everybody listening is true, because I bought a pillow and I said the word Fluffy, and then I had to send you a check for saying the word Fluffy. So about the pillow. So there you go. Hey, it's great to have you on, man. If you come to New York, let me know. Let's keep in touch and hang out. We've never really hung out, but fan of yours and happy for all your success, and keep it going.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
There you go, Gabe Iglesias. I hope you guys can make it out to see me at Rick Bronson's House of Comedy in Edmonton, Canada, February 14th to the 16th, and my one-man show, Paul Mercurio's Permission to Speak on Broadway. And thanks, as always, for checking out the podcast. We'll see you next week, everybody.